Hello, and a very warm welcome to the Red Velvet Revelry podcast with me, Marie-Louise. It's lovely to have you here for our first podcast of 2022. Our first five podcasts included a story and a review of a book that we think our revelers might enjoy. For this next season, we have a different, longer format, and it's based on a series of conversations that I had last summer with women who are doing interesting things in the field of women and sexuality, all on Zoom, of course. Each conversation is about an hour long, and individuals talk about what they're doing as well as some of their own experiences around sexuality. My first conversation is with Gemma Ryder. Gemma is a pleasure coach, a sex educator, and a conscious kink practitioner. She is definitely working in the field of sexuality and sensuality, but her main focus is on the importance of pleasure in every area of life, and she really cares about the experiences that people are having. If you would like to find out more about her work, her website is thesensualitysensei.com. Join me now as I chat with the very lovely Gemma Ryder. Red Velvet Revelry, Red Velvet Revelry. Join us and you will see. It's time for Red Velvet Revelry. Stories you never knew. Facts that are coming through. We'll bring them all to you. Sisters, that's what we do. Red Velvet Revelry. Red Velvet Revelry. Join us and you will see. It's time for Red Velvet Revelry. Hello. Today I have a guest with me, and her name is Gemma. I met Gemma when she organised a really great event, which was all around an opportunity for women to ask any questions they liked about sex. And she managed to organise a group of women who were experts in different fields of sexuality, and women could just ask questions and everybody got to hear the answers. We got into conversation, and I think that Gemma's got a really interesting experience of life that has led her to do the work that she's doing now. And I think her journey is one that other women will find both fascinating and also have bits that they really identify with, and some bits that they might not even have thought about for themselves and other women. Welcome, Gemma.
Thank you. Hi. Yeah, thank you for the introduction as well. And yeah, it's great that we've kept in touch since the event.
Yeah. And it's one of the great things about this work is that I'm getting to meet all kinds of people through online things that I just wouldn't have got to meet in my own backyard. So it's lovely to be connected. Maybe it'd be easiest to start with a bit about who you are and your own kind of journey so far.
Yeah, thank you. So I would describe myself as a pleasure coach, a sex educator and BDSM practitioner. And I work under my business name, which is the Sensuality Sensei. And I realize I've, you know, thrown these things out there as kind of job titles, but they might not make sense to everyone. And I guess really simply, whilst these seem like lots of different things, the core kind of thing beneath all of that is that, you know, this work is about kind of giving people the space and the permission to really be their full selves. And one of my peers described this recently. I really loved the way that they put this. It's like the work that we're doing is really loving people out of their shame. Mm. And I just, yeah, I really resonated with that.
Oh, lovely.
And I guess kind of like what got me into this is, you know, I grew up in a really beautiful, sort of safe and loving family environment. You know, I'm still very close with my family. But like many people, I guess, I feel my family really struggled or tended to struggle with articulating emotions and feelings and saying what we need. And we still struggle with it now. You know, we're all very indecisive and all trying to take care of the other people and not really saying what we want. So I grew up as this really sort of ultra sensitive, hyperactive kid. who really, you know, I found it impossible at times to regulate my emotions. And I also then didn't feel like I could tell anyone what I was feeling because I didn't have the language or the kind of structure to articulate that. And then this kind of led me to become super fascinated and curious about other people. I think one of my favorite things to do even as a child was to go out, you know, in public, go to like a coffee shop or shop and just people watch, you know, and see how other people kind of behave and express themselves. Wow. And yeah, I think like without doubt, that's really informed the work that I do, that and kind of my, you know, my journey through early adulthood, which I'm sure we'll get to. That really has driven this desire to do the work. You know, it's a like real deep curiosity in kind of how people behave and how they express themselves. And yeah, it just brings together all of these things that I'm interested in, that I like to do, the skills and life experiences I have. It kind of all comes together in this work, really, obviously for me.
Yeah, that sounds amazing because I'm sure so many of us can identify with that thing of, you know, people being lovely, but not necessarily helping you come to terms with what it means to be a sexual adult in your kind of adult life. And as a sensitive sort of person, I'm sure you must have had to work that out in different ways. How was that for you?
Bumpy. It's a really bumpy road. I think, you know, I've had a fairly normal childhood. I think it was really in my adult life that this kind of started to show up as a bit of a like a problem or, you know, something I was struggling with. And I noticed kind of my thing as an adult was really pushing myself as hard as I could all the time. And in a way, really, you know, deeply believing that I would grow through pain. That's the only way to kind of grow is through pushing myself to breaking point all the time. I found a lot of like groundedness, but I found a lot of comfort in practicing martial arts. So I kind of got into that really as a way to be able to protect myself. But I found just like the discipline and the structure and the power dynamic of it all kind of really comforting. There was a clarity of like how to communicate with other people, depending on like the power structure and things like that. And it also, I guess, is where my journey into embodiment really began. I didn't know it at the time, but I was, you know, watching and studying people's bodies and like seeing how the most minute difference in how they move their body completely changed the effectiveness of their technique. And also, know how to coach different people from different backgrounds and with different learning styles. So yeah, that was a massive, massive part of my life was, you know, work and training. And yeah, I think that's kind of really where I came into myself, but also like coincided with lots of tricky relationship stuff that then was happening around the same time.
And was there a particular sort of set of things that led you to do the work that you're doing, because it's quite a shift from martial arts and, you know, being a kind of driven person in the world to working with sexuality and sensuality and embodiment and all the work that you do now.
Yeah, it was very much led by my personal kind of journey. So as I mentioned, this kind of period of my life, these 10 years of doing martial arts, ran alongside me having a long-term heteronormative relationship. So I was in a relationship, a monogamous relationship with a man, and it ended terribly. And it really forced me to question so many aspects of my identity. So I found myself suddenly at 30, I had been on course to have this life I was supposed to want. So marriage, house, kids, but none of it really felt right. I was, you know, really sure that I was gay at this point, having fallen in love with a female friend. I was questioning my gender. You know, all of these things had been there. They'd been bubbling away for years, but I didn't feel I really had a place to discuss them. So when that relationship broke down, I moved out of the area I'd been living. I moved to London, threw myself into work, you know, even more so. And I guess outwardly, I was kind of living the dream, and my close friends and family all thought I was living the dream. You know, I was, you know, an achiever, mm-hmm. I guess. I had this good job, a decent salary. I was getting promoted. I was, you know, finding new ways to push myself physically, because I also kind of left behind my martial arts background at this point. You know, I was heavily involved in helping other people with mental health and well-being. You know, everything was so, you know, my life was full and rich. Mm. And in hindsight, I was intensity seeking in a way. You know, I was trying to distract myself from all of this confusion and discomfort that I felt. So yeah, outwardly feeling really like successful, but privately also going through such like crisis of identity and like burning out and recovering. Until one day I had a breakdown, a complete breakdown that really, really shook me to my core. Mm. And then all of a sudden I couldn't work for a while. So then all these other, you know, these other identity things that are still bubbling away and I kept pushing down, they came back up because all of a sudden I had all of this free time and I couldn't hide behind work because I wasn't working. So it kind of was a, you know, it's a reset button. Mm. It was a blank slate. And I really now look at that as a, you know, it sounds very cliche, but it was a breakdown, a breakthrough. It was like an opportunity to go, hold on, well, who do I want to be then? So I'm nothing right now. That's how it felt. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I went back to therapy. It's probably like the third time I tried therapy in my life. But I also started working with an executive coach who really was supposed to be helping me to get back to work and to, you know, do that kind of side, but actually introduced me to somatics or kind of working with the body. And that really started to open up a world to me. I started like following, you know, different people that were writing or researching in this space. And I got into doing Wim Hof breath work.
Oh, yeah.
I heard him on, I think it must have been Russell Brand's Under the Skin podcast. And then I came across an event where there'd be somebody who'd been trained by him doing this in-person workshop. So I went along, I looked at the rest of the, I kind of like signed up for it and then looked at the rest of the program. And actually it was this conscious sexuality festival or workshop that I was going to. And, you know, I looked at it, thought, oh, that's a bit edgy, all of that stuff. But, you know, why not at this point? Why not? So, yeah, I went along to that. And actually, you know, that going along to that event was really such a transformational experience, because all of a sudden I was surrounded by people who also, you know, felt a lot and wanted to talk about their feelings. Mm-hmm. And it gave me that real sense of belonging. And, you know, alongside that, all of a sudden, you know, people were talking openly about sexuality and sexual orientation and gender. And we were learning new ways to be intimate. You know, there's a real sort of like tantric influence there as well. So lots of eye gazing and talking about consent. And I just, it was such an expansion. Like, what, where's this been all of my life? Why am I only finding this in my 30s? Yeah, it was incredible. And then at that event, I actually met someone who we kept in touch, and they came from an FLR background, so a female-led relationship, so a female power dynamic. We would meet up, and when we came together in like physical intimacy, it blew my mind, because all of a sudden here was someone who was so patient, so responsive, and I almost felt like I was being worshipped. I never really felt that before. You know, I had all of these, you know, beliefs and patterns that I think sadly so many women have around, you know, my body being for someone else. It's here to perform for someone else. It's for someone else's pleasure. If I receive anything, it's only because that's going to lead to something else, or I must reciprocate whatever I receive. And they challenged all of that. Wow. And kind of refused to, you know, to receive anything in return. They were very happy to just give. And as a result of that, I think it was the first time I really slowed down enough to receive an experience touch that was incredibly tender and exactly what I wanted or needed to receive. And I hadn't had that before. You know, I'd had amazing partners and there'd been a lot of intimacy there, but I'd, you know, I'd always been a bit of an intensity seeker, you know, so lots of things have been fast and rushed and intense. And all of a sudden, you know, someone is really taking all the time in the world to kind of worship me. And it was just such an incredible experience. And I had this kind of hot, what I would describe as like a whole body awakening. Some people have later gone on to tell me this was, you know, more like Kundalini energy awakening in my body. And this came about from them stroking my arm. I thought, you don't read about this stuff, you know, in these like magazine articles that tell us how to have, you know, multiple orgasms and things. Actually, for me, the most profound thing was someone very tenderly stroking my arm.
That sounds so beautiful. And there's some women don't experience that in their whole life. You know, I mean, I'm so delighted that you're sharing about your experience and your story, because at Red Velvet Revelry, we're trying to help women hear all kinds of different stories about women's different experiences with sexuality, because we're so used to being told how to be sexual and what a good sexual experience looks like. And there's a lot of us wandering about going, and what's wrong with me that I don't like that? Or, you know, for many of us, it doesn't even occur to us that it's possible that the messages we've got are not really helpful or correct or even just the right things for us.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that shows up so much in work that sadly so many of us, you know, men and women, have this kind of agenda forced upon us of what pleasure should look or feel like. Mm-hmm. And a big part of the work that I'm kind of seeing is kind of undoing that, you know, detaching people from that and unraveling them so that they can, you know, from an empowered place, actually decide what pleasure is for them, you know, going as far as like actually defining these words. You know, that's some sessions, that's what we're doing. It's, you know, what is pleasure for me? What is intimacy for me? Like not a Google kind of definition, but what does it actually mean for them? What do they want it to be? And starting there.
Wow.
And kind of throwing out the rule book, you know, that we've kind of been passed on, that's just not our choice.
And you're absolutely right about this. It's the same for men, that they've been given messages about what it means for them to be sexual and how they should, you know, be with a woman, never mind kind of explore, you know, other possibilities of men with each other. And you know, you describe a female-led relationship dynamic. Can you say a little bit more about that language and what that is for those of us that don't know much about that?
It's interesting, because when I first came across this concept, I was like, I thought it was so radical. And now in the lens of, you know, what I know today, I'm like, oh, it doesn't seem so much. But the idea is that, you know, it's kind of shifting things on its head from the traditional dynamic of the, you know, in a heteronormative relationship, the male partner being the more dominant one that's making decisions, that kind of, you know, there is that implied power dynamic there, that, you know, the male is in charge and the female is somehow submissive to the male. And these female-led relationships is kind of like flipping that on the head. So it's more like, I guess this is where more of the kind of like female worship element comes in. It's like, it's actually the woman that's, at the top of that hierarchy, and is making more of the decisions and is holding that more dominant role in a relationship.
Yeah, and in a relationship where the communication is really good and individuals take turns. So what you're describing is a kind of not the assumption of what heteronormative sex is. It's just opening up so many more possibilities. for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think so many people are ready to kind of to rip up that rule book or at least question it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether that is around you know, as someone in a female body, do I, you know, do I necessarily want to relate only with men? Do I want to be monogamous? Does that relationship have to involve having kind of, you know, traditional, shall we say, like penis in vagina type sex?
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, so many people are starting to think, well, actually, that's not working for me.
Mm-hmm.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with any of those things. And I think that's, you know, something I want to also convey, that by opening up these possibilities, it's not saying that these new ways of relating are better or worse. It's just, you know, people deserve to have kind of awareness and choice around the different opportunities that are out there.
Which is back to this issue of, is there something wrong with me because I don't necessarily enjoy what I'm supposed to enjoy, and yet they maybe don't have any other models for what that looks like. I think the kind of broadening of the discussion of, well, actually, and I suppose in my experience, you know, particularly as a woman with menstrual cycles, that my sexuality can be different on different days. You know, yes. What I like. And so the amount of communication that is required for that to be a really, you know, kind of responsive thing in a relationship is quite, you know, it's quite sophisticated. And I think as women become more confident in their sexuality, then being aware of that and being allowed to talk about it, and never mind what they want and everything, is a, you know, it's part of that bigger picture. And the work that you're doing just makes that much more possible. You know, you are a person that someone could come to and say, I want to explore my sexuality. I'm thinking about this. I'm not sure about that. I don't know where, you know, I don't know who to speak to. I don't want to speak to my friends or my family or things like that. Am I right in thinking that's the kind of work you're doing?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, the types of people I work with is so varied, and like the reasons why they come to me is also so, you know, diverse. And as I mentioned earlier, there's, you know, there's people that come to me because they're like, hold on, you know, this isn't working for me. I don't think I want to be sexual. And then we break down, well, what does that mean? You know, what does sexuality mean for you? And then, you know, there's a whole part around, as you say, communication. And then we bring in like this other aspect of consent as well. And, you know, this is really the foundation of sexological body work, which is the training I'm completing now. And that's, you know, it's based on noticing, trusting, valuing, and communicating. Mm-hmm. And these four pillars kind of underpin everything else. So the first is, you know, noticing what's actually happening in your body. And as you say, it can be, as you know, someone in a female body, that there might be times in my cycle where actually, you know, I'm noticing what I'd love more than anything right now is for someone to, you know, just hold me. And the trust part for me is where we're kind of, that's where we're navigating the shoulds and the expectations. So it's like, okay, I feel like I'd really love for someone to just hold me. That's what I really, really want. And that's what I desire right now. But I bet my partner wants sex, or they probably want, you know, to do something a little bit more intense, or maybe they don't want to hold me. And then it's just learning to trust that part of you, your body, that's saying, you know, this is what I want, and valuing whatever comes up without judgment. So it can be that we, you know, we judge ourselves more harshly than anyone else. You know, we might think, you know, I don't deserve to just be held right now. I just need to crack on and do whatever my partner wants. But it's, you know, that process of like listening, trusting what's there, valuing whatever comes up, even if you feel it's a little bit, you know, unconventional, what your desires are, and then communicating it. And it's so important. And I think that part is really missing, that communication part. We don't get taught these skills.
Yeah.
Like, thankfully, you know, and much overdue, people are becoming more and more aware of consent. But it's so, you know, it's at such a basic level. It's like yes or no. And what kind of worries me with that is it almost people kind of get the impression that if I say yes, just think now, then that's like a, you know, that's a perpetual yes.
Yeah.
And that can be quite damaging. And that was my experience as well in long-term relationships of like, oh, well, we've done that before. So it's always a yes.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, what we work with in sexological body work is this enthusiastic kind of embodied consent.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that consent, you know, I can give you my consent now in this very moment. That doesn't mean it applies in 5 minutes time.
Yeah.
You know, it can be yes to something. And then we start and I'm like, actually, I know I said I wanted you to hold me, but I think I'd really like to lie here on my own.
Yeah.
And it's that, you know, the dynamic, fluid, always ever changing part of like being able to communicate that.
Yeah.
That it's so, so important.
It is subtle and dynamic. But if we don't even know that we have permission to change our mind, it's so difficult to do the other stuff that comes with it.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that one of the things that you do is your work as a BDSM practitioner. I wonder if you could say a bit more about that.
So funnily enough, I didn't realize, but from very early on in my adult life, I was engaging in practices that would be considered, you know, falling under like BDSM or kink umbrella. So in this long-term relationship I described, we were exploring lots of things that were, say, like unconventional. And I just thought, well, that's how people have sex. I didn't know. And it was just kind of normal for me. And it was only kind of later on in life, probably, you know, in when I started going to these conscious sexuality events and meeting people talking about these things, and you know, conversations would come up about kink and BDSM. And I thought, what's all that about? Started looking into it and realizing, oh, okay, well, yeah, I like this stuff. I've done a lot of this stuff and it's really interesting and I really enjoy it.
Even BDSM, could you just explain what that is for anybody that might not know?
Yes, BDSM is, it covers everything from bondage, discipline, domination, submission, and then you've got aspects of sadomasochism in there as well. And there's a whole range of different practices that could be classed as BDSM or part of the BDSM culture.
That's helpful. And I mean, it's something that some people, you know, I'll know a lot about it and some people don't know anything about it. And it seems like quite a scary thing from the outside if you don't, you know, if you haven't come across it, it's not familiar. But but I know from people that I know that they have a kind of spiritual experience about it. And so there's obviously a lot more to it than immediately kind of hits the visceral sort of senses. So it would be really helpful just to hear about, you know, what it is and your involvement so that we can make sense of it for those of us that it's a new thing.
I guess for me, like I'd been exploring this from a very early age in my adulthood, but it felt like it was in quite an unconscious way. Like I said, I didn't even realize that I was doing these things. And what's quite interesting now is it feels like I'm always coming back full circle into this world. So I'd kind of stepped out of it for a while and now coming back into it with all of the things that I've learned about consent, about communication. So doing it in a deeply conscious way. And for me, there's a real beauty in kind of conscious kink or conscious BDSM in that it allows me to explore different aspects of myself. So we spoke earlier about the different power dynamics that can exist in a relationship between traditionally male-led relationships and female-led relationships. Well, that's kind of a play on playing with power dynamics. So a big thing for me, or a big inroute into this world for me, was through submission. And what I was finding is that I was having to be so kind of controlling in my life, or so controlling of myself, should I say. You know, lots of stuff there around kind of repressing parts of myself, repressing emotions. This had been like a core theme that went through childhood and adulthood, you know, like keeping it all together. And you know, there's so much self-control involved there and so much like responsibility for other people in work. And for me, there was just such a beauty entering consciously and in like a very clearly communicated way with someone, entering into this dominant submissive dynamic where for that scene, so sometimes we call it a scene, which is where, you know, we're deciding for the next 3 hours or whatever, maybe it's an hour, that we're going to go into this framework. So we might be, you know, friends or lovers or whatever else the rest of the time. But whilst we're in this scene, someone is choosing to be dominant and someone is choosing to be submissive. That's one example. And whilst we're in that scene and someone is being dominant, for me, what that opened up is a part of me that could fully surrender. Mm. It just didn't need to be holding it all together. That didn't need to be worrying about everyone else, didn't need to be worrying about what I did, what I said. It's almost as if I could completely relax and really feel the experience in my body. It was like my mind would shut up for a moment and I could be really present with the experience. The majority of my experiences come from, you know, being submissive. Playing with that kind of power dynamic with partners, with lovers. And then more recently, actually, tables have turned a little bit. And, you know, I do some work now as well as a dom or a dominatrix or the dominant partner, where, you know, I'm facilitating those experiences for other people by, you know, holding this space, by kind of taking, you know, taking control of the scene in that moment. And It's just really, really beautiful work. I think sometimes, you know, from the outside, and I really relate to this still, you know, as someone who's lived this for, don't even know how many years, for 18 years or something like that now, it still from the outside can look weird, freaky, scary, dark, you know, all of these things, all of these like, oh, it just looks like, oh, not sure that's for me. But it's so varied. You know, there's, you know, people in the scene who, for example, my ex-partner who I had this DS dynamic with is what you'd call an affectionate dom. Mm. So he's really caring and nurturing. And, you know, you have people that go into this who, you know, want to be mothered or fathered or whatever else, you know, they're going into it for that experience. And it's just so, it's a, yeah, it can seem like the typical idea that, or image that a lot of us have of a dominatrix is, you know, I'm a woman in my stilettos with my like latex gear on and I'm beating a man up and, you know, it's all about punishing them and humiliating them. And that's not my experience.
Okay.
I really deeply see the work that I do on that side as like one of the purest acts of service. Mm. Because I spend a lot of time with a client beforehand, you know, understanding what it is that they want to experience and not just, you know, oh, I saw this thing online and it looks like this. It's like, you know, what's the actual emotional experience that you want to get from this? Is it that you want to surrender? What's going to help you mm-hmm. to surrender? What are these parts of yourself that you're feeling you have to hide because you're really ashamed of? Like what would happen, you know, or you're really ashamed of them and, you know, you're fearing judgment and like creating this, like almost, you know, sacred, beautifully held space for whatever comes up and just meeting that with so much love and like positive regard. So yeah, it's, I can feel myself, you know, I feel quite yeah. emotional when I talk about it.
I know, and I can hear it. You know, it's really very deep work. And I suppose for anybody who has a kind of an inkling of role play and both the fun of being something else than you normally are and the kind of that thing of putting down your normal roles and having somebody hold a space for you does it, you know, I can see how that could be really powerful and is, you know, is a much rounder, warmer kind of portrayal than is, you know, we normally have access to. So thank you so much, Gemma, because that's a real insight into something, because I think part of the reason that I want women to hear other women's stories about sexuality is that sometimes when you only have a bit of a story or a misunderstanding about something, you can project things onto mm-hmm. other women
yeah.
that they are yeah. not like me, or how can they do that? That's amazing. I could never do that. All these, whatever these stories are that we tell mm-hmm. ourselves about what other women do and what we can and can't do, you know, it's really important to kind of say, well, of course, everybody is a human being who wants to be loved and held. And even if there's times that that's not what they want something a bit different to that. It's in the context of being a human being. You know, the more we can understand each other and how we function, the more we can allow ourselves to be honest about whether we have things that we're not even allowed to think about.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
could help our relationship, or could help like with a partner or with ourselves. And the more bits of ourselves that we're not the more bits of yourself that you're not allowed to even look at or think about is, you know, the more problematic it is for being a whole yeah. rounded, integrated person.
It's so true. And I think you've articulated that beautifully. And yeah, that's a lot of what we're doing in this work. I say we collectively as people that are working in the sexuality space, whether that's as a sexological body worker or, you know, a BDSM practitioner, you know, there's so many different roles in this space. But it's recognizing that, you know, we all have these parts of ourselves that are unexpressed, unspoken, unseen, that we choose to repress because we fear judgment or we feel shame around them, or we just think that they're wrong. And by doing that, by keeping them repressed, they're kind of like we're keeping it in the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't go away, and it's going to come up in different ways. You know, it's going to show up in different aspects of our life. What we're trying to do is kind of bring those things into the light, you know, in a safe, consensual way. And giving space for that, because someone might enjoy flogging someone or whipping someone or whatever, you know, it doesn't mean that that's all that they are, and that they're, you know, a sadist, that all they want to do is go around all day hurting people. It's really not true. It's, they have this part of them, and you know, if that's integrated and brought into the light and it's given space to play out, then actually, yeah, it can be a real gift. It sounds really counterintuitive, but you know, anything that's kind of pushed to the side and not being kind of given space, I think that's where, you know, where there's more challenges for that person.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just all about kind of bringing it into this space, you know, bringing it to light, giving it space to breathe, for them to breathe. And as you say so beautifully, kind of being integrated beings.
And it's so lovely to know that you're out there doing this work, and that other people are doing, you know, work in this kind of space around sexuality, which is, you know, slightly different in different, you know, different people are doing slightly different things. And it is possible that if we wanted to or we needed to, we could find somebody who would be the right person to explore these things with. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you and find out more about what you do, what would be the best way for them to get in touch with you?
The best thing to do would be to start by going to the website, which is thesensualitysensei.com. You'll find a little bit on there about the different types of services that I offer, either, you know, for individuals or duos. There's both kind of stuff on the real coaching side, so talk-based coaching right the way through to these more intimate experiences, which could also involve like BDSM and kink. You know, this work is so broad that it's more about, you know, having that kind of personal connection as well, and what we each bring as our background and our personal experience. So, yeah, I mean, it's more about that resonance. So take a look at the story on there and see if it resonates.
And when you hear somebody telling their own story, you get a sense of what they're like and how they are, which is really helpful. If you ever want to do work counseling or any kind of work with somebody, you always want to have a sense of who they are and how they come across. It's so important, isn't it, to build trust and, you know, as you say, enthusiastic consent for whatever it is that we're doing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to just thank you so much, Gemma, for being willing to tell us about what you're doing and opening up that side of you that kind of shows your whole humanity and how you are using your own experiences to help other people. It's really lovely.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to talk and to share a little bit of the story. It's been yeah, it's been quite a beautiful experience actually to delve back into some of those memories and thinking about kind of what brought me to this again. So yeah, thank you for the opportunity.
And one of the kind of benefits of, you know, especially looking into your happy stories and these moments of transformation that we have, is that it brings it back and, you know, it can spark joy. You know, it's like that is something that can be valued. You know, you can relive it, the experience, in the same way that we can relive difficult experiences. But to have an opportunity to focus on our happy stories has got some real value, I think. Thank you.
Yeah. And I think just on that, sorry, I know we're wrapping up, but it just really, really stood out to me then about this, you know, it's about joy. And, you know, I think that's something that I really wanted to kind of articulate just before we finish, is that, you know, often people, you know, hear about, you know, work as a pleasure coach or working in the field of sexuality. And for me, you know, I think it's really important to stress to people, this isn't, it's not about like having good sex. You know, there's loads of articles in Cosmo about how to, you know, give your partner pleasure or how to have multiple orgasms, all this stuff. That's all out there. Of course, you know, that can be part of it. But for me, it's like when I talk about pleasure, I really mean it in the broadest sense. And it's about kind of maximizing our kind of joy and aliveness in this life. We were really born as sensual beings. You know, we were really driven by our physical senses, not our thinking minds. You know, we responded to how we were feeling in our bodies. You know, think about babies. They're like, they're hungry or they want to be held. They express it so freely. And somewhere along the way, you know, we learned to push all of that aside. And, you know, we switch off our curiosity, we switch off or numb out our bodily desires, usually with addiction and other like not healthy behaviors, just so that we can interact in the world in a way that we think is socially acceptable. And I just, you know, I feel so passionately there's another way.
Yeah.
And that's why I tend to use the word like pleasure coach, because for me, it's pleasure, you know, it's taking more pleasure in, you know, walking outside on wet grass and how that feels on my feet. It's not about sex. It's not about always about the kinky stuff. You know, it's just how can we be more alive every day?
Yeah. And that's beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed my conversation with Gemma. It's lovely to spend time in the company of someone who cares so much and who takes pleasure so seriously. I found her presence very soothing. I wonder what you thought. Next time, I will be speaking to the rather amazing Penny Pepper. Penny is a writer, an activist, and a disabled woman who is not afraid to speak about her sexuality. So join me next time on the Red Velvet Revelry podcast. Thank you for joining me.